Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really digging into the essentials, computational problem solving.
Exactly. We're looking at the core sources, academic notes, actually, that blend computer science ideas with technical documentation skills.
Yeah, the algorithms, the instructions that make tech work, but also, how do we actually explain these complex things clearly to other people?
That's the mission, really. Merging the logic, the CS part, with the, well, the art of clear writing.
And we think this deep dive might just give you that aha moment. We're going to connect some dots here. Think 19th century weaving and connect it straight to the chip in, you know, whatever device you're listening on right now.
It's a fascinating lineage.
Okay, so let's start with that history, because how we instruct computers today, it has these like really physical industrial origins.
Punch cards, right.
Right. And the Jacquard loom is the classic example. Joseph Marie Jacquard used these cards with holes punched in them.
Not for numbers initially, but for patterns. Exactly. For weaving complex fabric patterns automatically. The sequence of cards, the holes.
Yeah.
Those were the instructions. A hole meant a thread action happened, no hole meant it didn't. Conditional logic, basically.
Wow. So it was programmable hardware, in a sense.
Absolutely. And that core idea, feeding external instructions to a machine, well, that leaps forward to Charles Babbage.
Babbage and his analytical engine. Mostly theoretical, though.
The hardware was theoretical, yes. But the concept of programming it, that really clicks with Ada Lovelace.
Right. She saw beyond just calculation, didn't she?
She did. She envisioned manipulating symbols, not just numbers. Her notes on calculating Bernoulli numbers with Babbage's imagined engine. That's widely seen as the first real computer program. Incredible foresight.
So fast forward from gears and cards to, you know, the sleek processors we have now. Is the fundamental architecture still relatable to Lovelace's time?
Surprisingly, yes. It points to the power of the von Neumann architecture scheme. At its heart, a computer is still a central processing unit talking to peripherals, input-output devices.
Okay, so inside the modern box, what are the key players? Maybe think of it like an office setup.
That works.
Oh.
The processor, the CPU, that's the brain, doing the hard thinking, the calculation.
Got it.
Random access memory, that's your temporary workspace, like your desk. Fast access for what you're actively working on.
Okay, active files on the desk, makes sense.
Then the hard drives.
Yeah.
That's the filing cabinet. Slower, but for permanent long-term storage. The archive.
Right.
Everything connects through the motherboard. Think of it as the office infrastructure, the wiring. And you need clean power, so the power transformer is crucial. And for visuals, the GPU, the graphics processing unit, handles all the display stuff.
So same basic idea, process, temporary memory, storage, input, output, just way faster and smaller.
Exactly. The principles hold.
So we have the hardware sorted, but how do we tell this powerful setup what to actually do? Right. That gets us to algorithms, right? The core concept here. What's a good working definition?
Keep it simple. An algorithm is just the instructions for producing something with predictable results. That's it. Finite steps, clear outcome.
Usually shown as like inputs go into a process and you get a defined output.
Precisely. That input process output model is universal. Folding laundry, running code, it's the same abstract idea.
But getting human ideas into machine-readable form, that needs layers, doesn't it? Abstraction in programming languages.
Oh, absolutely. You can't just talk to the silicon. At the bottom, you have machine language.
The ones and zeros?
Yep. Pure binary.
Oh,
electrical signals the hardware understands. You could program in it, but, well, it'd be incredibly tedious and error-prone.
So we built bridges.
We did. Step up to assembly language. It uses mnemonics, short codes instead of just numbers.
Yeah.
A bit more human readable.
Still needs translation, though.
Still needs a compiler to translate it for the machine components. Then you get to the top layer. High-level languages.
Like Java, Python, the ones most people learn first.
Exactly. These are designed to be people-friendly. They use words, structures, much closer to how humans think and communicate. They abstract away all that binary complexity.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting for me. Because code running is one thing, but making sure another human understands the logic, that's documentation. And pseudocode.
Pseudocode is vital. It's basically an informal description of the algorithm. You write it so people can grasp the logic before getting tangled in the strict rules, the syntax, of a real programming language.
So it's usually not code that runs?
Typically, no. Though, interestingly, the source notes mention Python is often used as pseudocode because it's quite readable, almost like pseudocode itself, but you can actually run it.
That sort of blurs the lines, doesn't it, between a plan and the actual thing?
It does. And this ties into something else really important from the source material about communication effectiveness. The analysis found that graphical description diagrams, flowcharts, that kind of thing, is actually better than just text.
Better how?
Better at sparking active discussion among developers. And crucially, better for helping them recall the design details later.
Wow. Okay, so pictures literally work better than words for understanding complex code logic.
The evidence suggests so, which means maybe our pseudocode, our documentation, it should be more visual.
That makes a lot of sense. Let's trace a simple algorithm example, like that linear search they mentioned. How would that look in basic steps?
Super simple, very step by step. You need data, so enter a list of numbers.
Okay.
You need a goal. Define the number to be found. Then the example included a sorting. Sort the list step first, which is interesting.
Yeah, we'll come back to sorting.
Then the core logic. A question, a condition. Was the number found?
Yes or no.
Based on that, you print the result, and then you will learn. End. Clear, finite, predictable. Just what a computer needs. #3. Practical algorithm concepts and data searching.
Right. But to turn that pseudocode into real code, you need the actual nuts and bolts, the grammar, operators, structures. I know that single equals versus double equals trips people up constantly.
Oh, it's a classic beginner mistake. Huge source of confusion. In math, pions means one thing. In lots of codes.
Very different thing.
Exactly.
Yes.
A single equal sign, olandi dollar, is for assignment. You're putting a value into a container, like target 100. You're setting target to be 100.
Okay, assignment, got it.
The double equal sign, Weller's, that's the comparison.
Yeah.
The equality check. You're asking a question. Is this value equal to that value? Like if age equals 21.
Ah, so mix those up.
And your code might crash or worse, run fine, but give totally wrong answers because you accidentally changed a value when you just wanted to check it.
Yikes. And there are other key operators too, right?
Yeah. Logical ones like dollars for or, comparison ones like dollars for less than, greater than, or equal to, and your basic math, plus all in the hand, they're the building blocks.
And beyond operators, we need ways to hold on to data and reuse bits of code.
Right. Key concepts here. The variable. We just use target and age. It's the named container holding a value.
Simple enough.
Then the function. Think of it as a named block of code that does a specific job. You call it when you need that job done.
And you can give it specific info to work with.
Yep, those are the arguments, usually inside parentheses. Like the common print function, you put what you want printed inside the parentheses, makes code reusable and organized.
Okay. And for handling lots of data points together.
That's where arrays or lists come in. It's basically an ordered collection of values stored under one name.
So instead of having variable 1, variable 2, variable 3.
You have, say, numbers of 42, 17, 8, 23. The source notes mention Python often uses the term list for this. Especially for smaller sets. It lets you process groups of data easily.
Makes sense. So you've got your data in a list. Now, how do you find something specific in that list? Search algorithms? The sources mentioned three types.
Yeah, they listed linear search, binary search, and bubble sort. Now, linear and binary are for searching, finding stuff. Bubble sort is actually for sorting, for organizing the data first.
Let's stick with searching for now. Linear search, you said it's basic?
It's the simplest approach. Brute force, really. It just starts at the beginning of the list
and
checks every single item, one by one.
Item one, is that it? No, item two, is that it?
Exactly, until it either finds the target or gets to the end of the list. The notes point out it's only fast if what you're looking for happens to be right near the start.
But if your list has like a million items and your target is the very last one?
You have to look at all million items first. It doesn't scale well, it works, but it can be incredibly slow on large data sets.
Which is why other algorithms, like binary search, exist, even if they're a bit more complex to set up.
Precisely. Efficiency becomes critical when you're dealing with serious amounts of data.
Mm.
It's not just about getting an answer. It's about getting it in a reasonable time. #IV. Technical writing and ethical considerations.
Okay, so you've designed this efficient algorithm. Great. But now you need to explain it to your team, to a client, maybe even to yourself 6 months later. Technical documentation becomes key.
Absolutely essential, and it needs structure. The source material laid out mandatory components for, say, a formal research paper proposal.
Right. Things like an index, a purpose section, clearly stating the hypothesis or problem statement, the methodology. It's about clarity from the outset.
You need the plan laid out. The abstract, the summary, even the initial list of resources.
But then you do the work. When you write the final research paper, what gets added? What's the big shift?
The shift is from plan to proof. You absolutely have to add the discussion and findings. What actually happened? What did you learn?
So analyzing the results.
Yes. And of course, The formal references list, properly cited. The source specifically recommended Purdue OWL for APA style, which is a standard resource.
And thinking back to that earlier point, maybe the methodology and finding sections are where visuals could really shine, instead of just dense text describing a complex process or result.
A clear diagram or chart could make a huge difference in comprehension.
Absolutely. Leverage visuals to reduce that cognitive load on the reader. Alongside clarity, though, there's the whole ethical dimension, especially with code and digital content. Copyright seems like a minefield.
It really is, and it's evolving fast.
Yeah.
The sources highlighted several key watch-out areas.
Like what?
Well, huge questions around AI, the data used for training AI models, and the ownership and use of AI output. Where does that material come from? Is it copyrighted?
Tricky.
Then there's open source software development. Understanding the different licenses is crucial. What could you use? How? What are your obligations?
Mm-hmm.
Related to that are things like Creative Commons licensing and public domain licensing. Knowing the differences is vital, and even seemingly simple stuff like the use of others' works in the classroom or research, you need proper attribution and permission.
So technical communication isn't just about clarity. It's also about navigating these complex legal and ethical boundaries.
Definitely. Responsibility is key.
Now, something else the source material brought up, which I thought was really important, was connecting these technical skills, algorithm design, career readiness with, well, human wellness.
Yes. That connection was explicit. Achieving high-level technical outcomes, like CLO-4, use algorithm design, CLO-8, develop career readiness skills mentioned in the notes, doesn't happen in isolation. The demanding nature of these fields means support systems are crucial.
It's a recognition that the person behind the code needs to be okay, right? You can't be innovative or productive if you're burnt out or struggling.
Exactly. And the notes detailed specific resources aimed at providing that support, emphasizing accessibility.
Yeah, things like access to 8 free counseling sessions with licensed therapists via Skylight Counseling Services. That's pretty significant, on campus or virtual, too.
And also You Will Teletherapy Services, listed as free of charge, multiple options, which is good.
Mm-hmm. And critically, clear points for immediate help, crisis support.
Yes, listing the 988 Suicide Prevention Hotline and the Crisis Text Line, text HOME or HOLA to 741-741. Having those readily available is vital in any high-pressure environment, academic or professional.
They even mention a specific event, a healing circle related to navigating political climate anxieties, back in October 2025, organized with El Centro de Excelencia. It shows a proactive approach to creating supportive spaces.
The underlying message seems to be that utilizing these resources, taking care of wellness, is actually part of developing career readiness. It's not separate from it.
Right. It's foundational. Hashtag outro. So wrapping this up, what's the big picture for you, our listeners? We've traced this line from Ada Lovelace, figuring out step-by-step instructions.
And the core of algorithms.
All the way to modern computing. It's about breaking down complexity into simple, predictable steps. That skill hasn't changed.
And running parallel to that is the other crucial skill, documenting and communicating those steps effectively, making them understandable to other humans.
And we found that surprising, or maybe not so surprising, insight. Visual explanations, diagrams, often work better than just text for complex technical ideas. They boost understanding and recall.
Which leads us to a final thought for you to consider. We know computational thinking is about simplifying instructions for machines, and we know visual aids help humans grasp complexity faster.
Dope.
So how much mental energy, how much cognitive load could we save, not just in coding, but across all fields, if we consciously prioritize clear visual representation over dense blocks of text? Think about your own work or study. Is there one area, one process, where you could swap out paragraphs of explanation for a single, well-designed diagram or flowchart?
Something to definitely think about. What could you visualize better? We'll leave you with that question until our next deep dive.